That's, you know, generally your period, you shouldn't really notice your period. And I know, and I hear you women that are on the other side of this, just think what, that you want to throw something at this, because I know so many of you out there are suffering, but that does not make it normal.
Yeah.
And don't ever let anybody tell you that it's normal or it's part of being a woman. Like, what sort of message is that? Suffering is just a normal part of being a woman.
But I suppose to get started, the first question that I wanted to ask you, and because, you know, a lot of people, a lot of women listen to this, hopefully most people listen to this will have a period, you know, and you talk a lot on your Instagram about having a healthy period and those kind of signs and signals to look for with the healthy period or with the period that's not necessarily healthy. So what kind of advice would you give somebody about kind of a general healthy period that...
What they're looking for, what they should be, a lot, what is actually considered normal?
Yeah.
Well, basically, the first thing to point out is that we'll only ever have a period approximately 12 to 14 days after we ovulate. So if there's no ovulation, there is no period. And that's really significant because there are many women probably listening to this, or maybe men... that know women that are taking hormonal contraception. And hormonal contraception prevents pregnancy by stopping the process of ovulation. So therefore, when they bleed, when they take the break, or if there's any kind of spotting in between, that is not a true period.
Yeah.
So, and that comes as quite a surprise to many people that are taking the pill. They think that they still are having periods, a monthly period, but they're not. So I think it's really important to clarify that at the start. It's very common confusion, but of course, when you think about it, contraception stops the body ovulating, so to avoid pregnancy, therefore there's no period. So the main part of our menstrual cycle is ovulation, and via the process of ovulation, we produce the hormones estrogen and progesterone, which are just vital for so many aspects of the female health. But we can come back to that because we're going to go on to what a healthy period is. So approximately 12 to 14 days after ovulation, and I do suggest that women learn how to know when they're ovulating, and that's generally following their fertile mucus, the discharge of fertile mucus.
Yeah.
The period should start on day one of your period is the first day of full flow. So there's no spotting or staining beforehand. And if there is, it's the end of your previous cycle. And quite often the spotting and staining beforehand would be dark in color, maybe even brownish. And that's because it's stale blood. Fresh blood is red, stale blood is brown. And some people would say that it perhaps was maybe the end of the last period that didn't make it out at the end of the last period. So now as the cervix is opening to bleed again, that it's
just stay there, like, and just, it just stays there.
Yeah. So they reckon. So anyway, we've established the day one, because that's another thing that causes confusion. People aren't quite sure what is day one. So it's the first day of full flow, and it should be a healthy flow. We really shouldn't be worried about leaking or having to run to the bathroom every hour, or, you know, you're sitting at work in a meeting and you're thinking, is it safe to make for me to get up off this chair? That's not a healthy period. That's, you know, generally your period, you shouldn't really notice your period. And I know, and I hear you women that are on the other side of this, just think what, that you want to throw something at this, because I know so many of you out there are suffering, but that does not make it normal.
Yeah.
And don't ever let anybody tell you that it's normal or it's part of being a woman. Like, what sort of message is that? Suffering is just a normal part of being a woman. There are always things that can be done. So other aspects of the period, there shouldn't be any clots.
Mm-hmm.
maybe small little bits of tissue, but women will know the difference. Like, you will know when you see a clot, and many of you have seen them. It should be a good healthy red color, not too dark and not very light pink either. Pain, believe it or not, there should be no pain. Very, very little to mild cramping, maybe for 30 minutes to an hour early that day or during that day. But that really should be about the extent of it. And I know, and my heart goes out to all of those women that are suffering, not just the first day of their period, but maybe a week before their period and for 1, 2, or 3 days during their period, where their life really is compromised and difficult due to the extent of their period pain.
Yeah.
And then this is the big one as well. The bleeding should last anywhere between at least a minimum of 3 days and up to about 5 days would be the max. Day one and two would be the heaviest. Sometimes day two is heavier than day one. That's fine. But generally day one and day two are the heaviest. And then three is a little bit lighter and four and then five, kind of that's it. There should be no spotting or staining at the end. It should just either just stop or just dwindle off. But a lot of women would have spotting for a few days. Or how many of us have experienced this where your period stops, completely goes away on a Wednesday, Thursday, there's no period, and then Friday, it's back. I think we've all been caught out like that. Again, that's very common, but just because something is common does not mean that it's normal. And of course, it's nothing very serious, but it's just not optimum. And we should always be, you know, we go for blood tests and we're like, oh, we're told we're normal, but you know, normal's not good enough. We want to be in optimum health.
Yeah.
And they are just tiny little clues that perhaps our digestive system, certainly when it stops, skips a day and starts again, that's a clue. That's an indication that our digestive system isn't in optimum health. I should mention that I practice Chinese medicine and a lot of how I look at the period and how I interpret it, I would apply to diagnostics in Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically is your period. The moodiness and everything, the acceptable thing, like you should get tired prior to your period. And of course, day one and day two, you are bleeding.
Yeah.
You will feel tiredness. And that's normal. Like completely wiped out, maybe not, but there should be a level of tiredness. The other thing that we can say is normal is a heavy feeling in the pelvis. And that would be because the womb has doubled in size. Well, we can only approximate. I'm sure all women are different and different sizes and maybe not exactly twice the weight and maybe some will be a little bit more. It's definitely in women's health and especially reproductive health is certainly a menstrual health is certainly an area of medicine that is quite lacking in research. But the womb does get heavier just before the period because those 2 weeks, well, throughout the menstrual cycle, but in particular those 2 weeks prior to the period, this is post-ovulation, the lining of the womb is thickening in preparation for implantation of a fertilized embryo. So of course it's going to be a little bit heavier than just the day after your period ends when all yeah. has left the womb. And this, Stephanie, I know you're a runner. So this is definitely something that I would tell you to pay heed on because your womb is held in place by quite a lot of ligaments. The womb is also, and the pelvis is designed for the expansion of your womb and those ligaments to accommodate a pregnancy at full term. You know, you think like our wombs post-period might be about 2 to 4 ounces and then maybe up to 8 ounces just before the period starts.
Yeah.
So we have that space to accommodate that growth.
Yeah.
But the womb is going to move. So you think when you're running repeatedly and you are hitting the concrete and it's sending the shocks up through your body, that is going to like cause a little bit of movement within the womb. So then the womb is moving and all our organs move slightly, but the womb has that little bit more room to move and its ligaments are all going to stretch. And over time, they just become a little bit more lax and loose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's certainly really, if you're a runner, which I know you are, it's worth considering, should you be running the day before your period, or those 2 or 3 days before your period when your womb is heavier, and putting
probably can't probably just can't, you know.
Well, it's interesting because I women come to me and they say, oh no, I like a run, and I run maybe 2-3 times a week, just 5k or whatever, and then I explain this to them and they come back to me and they're like, I just can't do it anymore. It's like now that they know I've tried and it just doesn't feel comfortable anymore. So, and I love that. And then, and what I say to them is like, it's okay, because the week after your period, you can do an extra run because everything's nice and light. And
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and you can make up for it then. And that's a really important thing that women can do with the cycle. I mean, I know society tells us that it's a curse, it's such a negative thing, and to be embarrassed about it and ashamed of it and everything. But ladies, we have this opportunity twice a month, ovulation and during the period, where we are getting a direct message from our bodies if they are working okay, if everything's in good health, or if there's an area where we need to give a little bit of attention to.
Yeah.
If we see that fertile mucus coming, you know, anywhere between day 9 and day 14, where it gradually builds up, then we know, okay, ovulation is happening. And if our period is happening 12 to 14 days after that, and it's a good color and there's not a lot of pain, and, you know, it doesn't inconvenience us that much, then, yeah, we know everything's okay. And so if a woman is tracking this and then, you know, life's busy, she's been running here, there, everywhere, children are sick, there's extra pressure on at work, there's a row with the family, or maybe she's flown halfway across the world on holidays, she might notice that she doesn't ovulate the month following that.
Mm.
And that's an indication for her, from her body. That's a message going. She can then go, I didn't ovulate. What have I done in the last few weeks that may be contributing to this? And she may go, well, you know, there was that week I didn't get any sleep because my children were sick.
Yeah.
Or I took too much on at work. And, or maybe I've tried this new diet that I've been doing for 6 weeks and it isn't agreeing with me. So we've got this feedback mechanism happening every 2 weeks that's given us a message as to whether or not we need to take a little look at our lifestyle, tweak it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work, then we seek help from a doctor or a therapist, whichever, depending on how much help is needed.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for being in tune with all of this. And I know you talk about like the spring, summer,
mm-hmm.
autumn, winter, you know, for like, and that book, I think it's Maisie Hill, Period Power. She talks a lot about that as well.
Yeah. Alexandra Pope taught me all about this. Gosh, I'm not even going to count how many years ago now. I'll just leave that one. And she was the first one to introduce me to the idea of the seasons. I'm like, and you know, I'm that girl doing yoga. I'm and eating the real foods. My mom bought me a magazine when I was 14 back in the 90s, Tops Auntie, and this is where I got a lot. This is where I got my flair for the health and looking after your body. So
yeah.
I was ahead of the game in some ways, and I knew about healthy periods and everything. And then Alexandra sat us down in a group and talked to us all about the seasons. And, you know, like you're hearing this and going, this sounds a bit crazy, because we've never heard anything positive about our periods.
Yeah.
And then, but the other part of you is going, this makes so much sense. This really resonates with me. Because I think intuitively we know it as women. We know that there is an inner rhythm in us, and our bodies are probably craving for us to live within that rhythm or follow that rhythm.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I see it in women's faces when I explain it to them, and they're like, it's like they've been waiting on somebody just to say it out loud, because I do believe that they know it at some level.
Do you think that how would you recommend somebody learn? People are probably listening to this going, what are they talking about? Those seasons.
So basically, we always start day one of the cycle is the first day of your period, as we've covered, and that season would be winter. How do you feel in winter? Okay, so I'm thinking of the northern hemisphere here, but you know, in winter, how do you feel? It's colder. You want to just, it's darker. So even though it might be summer for us externally, within our bodies, we might feel a little bit cooler. We might feel there's a darkness around us that makes us want to slow down, that makes us want to sit on the sofa and put a blanket over us, and in some ways, like almost hibernate. You are so much less social. And really, it's a great time to meditate. It's a great time to look inwards. Maybe eat a little bit of extra food, you know, and that really relates to what we are supposed to do in winter. Now, one thing I will explain, I have said that day one of your period is winter. But Stephanie, if you know when we have a full moon and we are told the full moon is going to be on Wednesday, but if we look out the window on Monday night and Tuesday night, we can see that the full moon is already full. It just hasn't peaked. Mm-hmm. And then we have it maybe on the Thursday and Friday as well. So that's kind of how the seasons go with our menstrual cycle as well. So winter would maybe start 2 or 3 days before the first day of your period. And I know that there's a lot of women listening to this and they're really resonating and going, yeah, I do want to slow down and I do want to just sit on the sofa and put a hair mask in and kind of nurture yourself.
Yeah.
So then when the period ends and we are in the follicular phase, which means it's the follicles are developing, which hopefully an egg will pop out of one of those follicles at ovulation time. Estrogen is building up in our body again to stimulate the lining of the womb, the fertile mucus and the development of the follicle and egg. But it is our energy hormone. It is our hormone that gives us get up and go. It makes us look better. I don't know if it makes us look better or if it just makes us feel like we look better. I'm still trying to work that one out. I have noticed the best day of my cycle is day 6.
Yeah.
I am just, because I think, you know, when we have, the period is a cleansing time as well. You know, we're letting go, we're shedding. And I've let all that go and let it go behind me. And I'm ready. I've had, the estrogen is beginning to build. And I am like,
you're ready for a fresh start.
Yeah, but I look in the mirror and I'm like, I look great. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
so it's like the beat.
But I do, I'm actually going, do I actually look great? Or is it just the hormones making me feel like I do, you know? So then that's building up. And we'd call that our springtime. And just like the spring in here in Ireland, you know, the energy is beginning to lift and we know that there are brighter days ahead and we've something to look forward to. And then we will slowly run in towards ovulation. And this is when we as women need to get up and get out there and put ourselves forward. And that is when that's when you know, sitting on the sofa is really not going to appeal to you. You know, you're like, you know, if I was to call you up when you're coming up to ovulation time, and I'm like, yeah, do you fancy coming around? We'll have a bit of a catch up. You're like, no. Let's get the high heels on and go to a bar or go out for coffee. You know, you want to put yourself out there because you have so much more confidence, so much more energy. And basically, you do want to put yourself out and get noticed because there is an egg on the way. And at some level in deep in our bodies, we are thinking, go out there and get some sperm.
Yeah, it's just, no. It's this, for anybody who, like, I started to track my cycle religiously with one of the tracker apps, and I know a lot of people use them, but I would encourage anybody to, who maybe isn't following along with what you're saying, they're like, oh, I'm not sure I've ever felt that, is to really kind of look out for those signs and signals and get used to that rhythm. Yeah.
It does take a while. I'm very, I'm funny about the apps because an awful lot of people I would say to them, have you, what do you ovulate? What do you know if you ovulate? And they're going, yeah, well, my app tells me. I'm like, no, your app has no idea what's going on in your body. It's recording the data that you enter, and it's running a few algorithms, and it's kind of guessing. You know, if you're sick or super stressed, it's not going to build that into the algorithms and adjust accordingly. And again, I just, the idea that a woman isn't smart enough or capable or in tune enough with her own body to determine whether or not she's ovulating.
It's great to keep it in account somehow.
It's okay to use it as a record keeper, but definitely do not depend on them to help you figure out what's going on in your body. So yes, but definitely yes, keep even pen and paper or online if you like, but do keep a record of every day, and you will be surprised at how you do recognize the how you feel and how you look and all of these things, and there will be a rhythm to it. And then you can use, once we ovulate, we reach our peak at ovulation, and our peak, when I say we're always at a peak, they're just different kinds of peaks. Around the time of ovulation, this would be a good time to go for a job interview. I mean, I know we don't always get to schedule these things, or to go on a date. It's a good time if you have to do a presentation or put yourself out there. If you're like, Stephanie, this is your day to run. You know, you're going to run a little bit faster. You're going to enjoy it that little bit more. If you lift weights, you may get a personal best. You know, you just have that extra oomph behind you. And as ladies, if you are, when you're listening along and you're thinking you're going to make a record of all this, you know, it will take a month or two, but you will be able to use this to your advantage a lot of the time. It's a time you're going to cook extra things, and yeah, it's just, it's a pity that we're not on ovulation all the time.
That's all I'm thinking.
Yeah, then that wouldn't be healthy, because we do ebb and flow, and there's yin and yang, and there's balance everywhere. And if we were in that state all the time, that probably wouldn't be beneficial for us long run. It just always sounds so good. But then we're finished with, that was our summer ovulation, the peak, that is summer. And then we are slowly, then we'll move into autumn, where we begin to naturally want to slow down and take it a little bit, a more gentle pace towards things. We are beginning to look more inwards. We're less likely to want to put ourselves out there. It's an excellent time to schedule your facials or your massage. Remember when we used to be able to schedule those things? It's a great time for strategy planning. You know, the autumn coming back into the winter season. So instead of at work putting yourself out there or doing presentations, it may be more a bit of looking over things and planning. And yeah, another thing that's really good at that time is filing and clearing out as well, but that just doesn't sound as interesting. And then we're back to slow down for winter and taking it easy again. So, but what is happening in this world is we are trying to do the big energy things when at the natural, you know, come autumn, winter, and then we're struggling with it.
Yeah.
And we're getting annoyed and we're getting angsty and, and then we have this bubble at around ovulation time, and we're away off for a massage or a facial, or we don't take advantage of that time.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, and if you are living with a man, they really get the seasons. They really get the seasons. And sometimes you don't even have to say anything. They'd be like, oh, it's winter this weekend, isn't it? And you know, you know, because before it was just alien and we didn't know what mood a woman was going to be in. But when she is living, and I know in the modern world, we can't perfectly live in our flow because some things are scheduled beyond our control. But when you sit with your partner or whoever it is you live with and explain a little bit of this to them, and then they're there with you. Like if you've got children, they maybe do that little bit extra come late autumn, early winter. or they make sure like go you to bed early or go and have a bath, or you know, they're just there for you. And then you can pay them back come ovulation time when you've got more energy. And it really, really works. The feedback that I get from my clients that say, you know what, he gets it and he doesn't annoy me anymore in the late autumn winter because he knows. And I'm going, yeah, but it's because you also know and you're living it more within that rhythm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, so it is, I know if you're new to this and listening, you're probably still thinking, no, I don't know. And you know what? You will never know until you tune in with your own body. And I'm a big one for saying, listen to your body before you listen to me, because it knows more about you than I do. And as you say, use the app, but you tell the app what's going on. Don't you let it tell you. And make a note of your feelings and your energy levels every day. And within a month or two, you will find that you will get into the rhythm.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's becoming in tune with all those different signs and signals that your body is naturally trying to tell you is so important. And I think it's the work that you do around it is raising awareness and educating women and giving women that power to do that. But I think there's so much that women don't know. Even just what you're describing there about all those ebbs and flows and those different peaks, like women just unfortunately just may not be aware of all that, you know.
No, they're really not. And Stephanie, I see women and I'm talking to women all the time, and they're smart women and they are successful women, and they're well educated, they're well read and doing amazing things in their career and rearing families, you know. They know things. And they come into me and they're like, I had no idea how to tell when I'm ovulating. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And then they look at me as if, because sometimes they feel like, did all the other women know this? And I missed out somehow. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Just not talked about enough.
Yeah, no, truly,
and like,
yeah.
This whole thing where it's all about, you know, oh, we don't need periods and we don't need, and we can live without them and all of that, which I'm not a fan of, I'll say, because we really need to ovulate, because that's how we produce the estrogen and progesterone, which are so good for our skin, our mental health, anxiety levels, our digestion, our metabolism, our bone health, our cardiovascular health, you know, so they're pretty much a big deal.
Yeah. And so when you get a client in and they say, they come to you and say, I have period pain, for example, that's crippling for, you know, a week, or, you know, I have my hair, whatever symptoms, these intense like PMS symptoms that are totally way off, you know, what they should be. How do you kind of reconfigure or assess somebody like that who might have something that's kind of going on a little bit crazy with their period?
Okay, so I will have women come in to me quite often, and they were put on the pill 16 or 17, and immediately, now these women are in their 30s, so immediately I'm like, that's a red flag, you know, why? And I think, what for? And they were like, oh, my periods were so bad. So then they were on the contraception for 10, 15 years, and then when they stopped, things just came back with a vengeance. And
yeah.
These are the women, and I know that you know women, but, you know, they couldn't go to school during their periods. They can't work during their periods. They faint, they vomit, they pass out. It's unbelievable what some women have to go through with their period. And immediately I'm thinking, there is a possibility. Now, I'm not allowed to diagnose in Western medicine. I do not have that capability. But it's certainly, I know enough to know that they need to go and see a consultant gynecologist for further investigation. And that is something that's worth mentioning. I think off the top of my head, it takes on average 9 years for a woman to be referred and get a diagnosis of endometriosis. 9 years.
What?
Yeah, Stephanie, they are told that, oh, periods are meant to be painful. That's due. Yours is just worse than other people. You know, women have been told, like, Are you sure you're not imagining it? It might be in your head. Maybe does she have a problem at school? So many things. Oh, you grow, what, maybe go and have a baby. And then, like, imagine being told, have a baby, and it'll go away. When you'll be having a baby, it'll be fine. Like,
oh, no. My God. So there's a lot of misdiagnosed or undiagnosed cases, you think?
Oh, absolutely. So part of my job is to tell the women, you know, you really need to see a consultant gynecologist here, but I can still work with them as well. To improve things to some degree, at least. Sometimes I can get them to a really good place, but I'm not that person. That I've huge respect for Western medicine. I think Western medicine and Chinese medicine are both amazing. I always say when you open up Google Maps, you can look at the street view or you can look at the satellite view. Both of them are exactly right, but they are completely different. They're just two different ways of looking at the same thing. So I have no problem of sending people to Western medicine when they need it. And yeah, so that they've often been overlooked, or they're diagnosed quite often with IBS because the womb is right next to the rectum. And endometriosis, sorry, I should have explained what endometriosis is. Endometriosis is where the lining of the womb is called the endometrium. So, and it's endometrium-like tissue that grows outside of the womb. So it's very similar to the lining of the womb, and it is growing outside of the womb, most commonly on the ovaries, the fallopian tubes, the bowel, the bladder. But it has been known to travel, and it's been found on lungs and on just various parts of the body. But for the majority of the women I see, it is growing on their bowel and bladder. Mm-hmm. Ovaries. So when you think that when your body is releasing the hormones that cause the lining of the womb to thicken and to grow.
Yeah.
The endometriosis is also reacting to the hormones, and it's also growing. So it might be growing on the bowel, for example.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of women would have it's often misdiagnosed as IBS. Because they can have a lot of bowel problems due to endometriosis. So it's certainly a disease that's worth mentioning.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's very common.
And is that something that develops, can it develop at any age?
Oh, yes. I do remember thinking that hearing that apparently the belief was that it only happened to women in their 30s or whatever, but no, like, I'm quite sure that there are teenagers that have it as well, certainly at the early stages. So it is worth doing a little bit of reading up about and finding out, and if you are having those severe symptoms and that, just making sure that you do get to see a gynecologist. So I'm not sure what had got us onto that. Oh, yes, what I would do with women. Yeah, so that's my first thing. If they are really severe, they're red flag. But the majority of women just have a really uncomfortable time with periods, or, you know, a difficult day or two, but nothing, you know, they can get on with their life. The first thing, I'm big into helping people help themselves, and I believe there is so much that people can do without the need for me or for herbal medicine or for Western medicine if they have a few tweaks. So I would definitely, before I would give them any herbs, I would send them home to take raw ginger tea every morning, which is just ginger root. When you add the hot water to it, brew it for a little while and sip on it. And then a few breathing exercises as well that they can do at nighttime. And I'm still surprised at how much good that can do some women. For some women, the feedback is like, okay, I'm finished with you. I don't need to help you anymore. You've nailed it. And
really?
Honestly, I did, Stephanie, I shared these tips 1 January on my Instagram because you know yourself, you're coming up to December, late December, early January, and it's all, oh, lose weight and get healthy. Yeah. And, here's, it costs this much, or this supplement is amazing, sign up for £99 a month, or all these crazy things that just cost so much money. And I am like, we are forgetting about the basic needs of a body. And you know, what does my body, your body, or anybody's need? We need really good blood flow around the body. We need blood to be able to get to every cell freely. So that's one thing we have to take care of. We need a really good digestive system, a really strong, healthy digestive system that is able to take our food and transform it into nutrients and then transport those nutrients around the body. We also need gases to flow freely within our body. So that's more about the lungs and the breathing. And then we need to manage our stress. And if I can help women do those things, or men do those things, then quite often they may not need my help, or they would need a lot less of my help. So I shared those tips, and the feedback was coming into me via DMs on Instagram about I've taken screenshots of them, and I've created like a little document for myself on my laptop with all the screenshots, just about how it had helped people's anxiety, it had helped their IBS, it had helped this, that, and the other. And I was like, wow. So then that's where my little ebook came from, because I just put all the tips together with a few more in the form of like just a little ebook. And yeah, people are buying that, using that as a guide to help them. And the thing was, Stephanie, all the tips were free. They're just things that you do, you build into your routine in the day, and they don't cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
The big one is the ginger tea.
Yeah, I was going to say, the ginger tea, is there a way that people can buy, like, is it ginger root they can just buy?
Yeah, ginger root. I'll explain to you where that comes from, because it's really important. I think we all, well, actually, it can get very confusing. I'm sure you'll agree with me about what we are supposed to eat. I just say to people, eat real food. If you're eating real food, you can't go too far wrong.
Yeah.
And, but what we in the Western world neglect and don't talk about enough is how to eat.
Yeah.
And that's what really lets us down. And an example that I give that is absolutely destroying our digestive systems is the cold food and drink and the ice drinks. Stephanie, you see them all over the place in America, don't you? They love their ice.
They love ice in America.
Love it. And we're not much better. Oh my God, they put ice in their coffee in America. Well, they do that here now too. But So this is one of those things where I know you're thinking, right, how ice is water? How can that cause any harm?
Yeah.
Well, it's like this. It's like one of the biggest jobs that your body has to do is to break down food into teeny weeny nutrients. And like, that is a big job.
Yeah.
So what do we need in the stomach when we want to do a big job? We need lots of blood. No matter what we're going to do with our body, we need, you know, if we're going to exercise, we warm up, we get the blood flowing. You know, we need the blood in the stomach. What does ice do? It causes the blood vessels to contract, to constrict. It slows blood flow. It takes blood flow away. So when we put ice in our stomach, or even a cold breakfast, and especially in the morning, it just really, the blood's not there to then when we eat the food, it's not going to get digested properly.
That's very interesting.
And isn't it? You're thinking about, oh my goodness, all those dinners I've had with ice beforehand. But if you've ever been to Asia, they will drink tea before they have dinner. And if you've been to Italy, the south of France, or to Spain, they take, tiny sips of alcohol before they eat, because they want to warm the stomach up. They want to increase the blood flow, because they know they need the blood in the stomach to digest the food.
Yeah. And in the south of France, well, I'm familiar with, I know a lot of younger kids, like from a young age, maybe 15, 14, 15, 16, whatever, would take small sips of wine, like red wine.
Yeah.
You would see that often, like it kind of would be done at the dinner table. So that must be the reason.
Oh, absolutely. And I was very lucky that one of my friends lived in Sardinia for 14 years. So, and I visited quite often, and she would tell me that children weren't allowed cold drinks until they were maybe 14 or 15. You know, to protect their digestive system. Yeah, to protect the digestive
system. Coming for someone who lives in America, like, this is insane.
It makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes people still look at me and they're going, I'm not so sure. But, you know, Stephanie, you know, on that cold winter's day when we're outside and our hands are freezing and then we lift our phone and we struggle to use our fingers.
Yeah.
Because the hand is so cold and the blood has constricted to try and keep the warmth in deep within the body. It's what's happening in the stomach as well. So it doesn't matter how healthy your food is. If you are putting ice or a cold smoothie or a cold drink inside your body before you eat, there's going to be restrictions on digestion. And, you know, and I'm watching, I saw somebody on Instagram the other day make a smoothie with some frozen fruit and peanut butter or some kind of nut butter. And I'm thinking, that's quite oily, greasy, fatty. How are you going? How is the cold going to wash that down, break it down? Like, would we ever wash a frying pan with cold water? No.
Yeah.
Because you ain't breaking that fat down.
Okay, so it resonates. It's a kind of a scientific straight conversion when you're talking about, you know, that we've all had been frozen in winter and had the hands that you can't move properly. You know, it's hard on a winter's day when I'm going out for a run on a winter's morning, like you're so stiff, like you can't move just from the cold, you know. So it totally makes sense.
Absolutely. And it's just so simple. So, and I mean, one of the reasons in Chinese medicine we it's all based on the free flow of blood, and if there's a buildup of mucus or phlegm, or, you know, and it's about providing the dietary advice, and the herbal medicine is about creating a really optimum environment for our microbiome or gut bacteria. So it's not just about taking a probiotic, because, you know, they're transient, they don't stay within the body. It's about creating a healthy environment within there. It's like, you know, taking a rose bush and planting it in the desert. It's not going to survive. It's not the right kind of environment. So the cold, sometimes period pain might be caused by what we would say cold in the womb.
Okay.
And it's just because it's cold and it doesn't have that oomph, it doesn't have that warmth to help it move freely. And these ladies, you know, they will get relief from their period pain with a hot water bottle.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways we know. So if you are taking the ginger in the morning, it will warm your stomach up and prep it for digestion. It's great for bloating. And I think that is the main, one of the biggest things that people are getting from the little ebook going, oh, a lot of this helps with bloating. I'm like, yeah, it's just supporting your digestive system, really. And then for some women, then the ginger is enough to really help with their period pain as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hope everyone who's listening now is going out to get the ginger tea.
They will.
To drink a warm drink in the morning.
I've just been to the supermarket and there's no ginger and I'm blaming you. I mean, so, and you know what? It's not, there may be the odd person that just, it doesn't agree with, but drinking some ginger tea in the morning is not really going to do anybody any harm.
Right, yeah.
And whilst it, like, some people have got back to me and said, that's great, I have no period pain anymore. For others, it will not be the complete answer. And I'm not going to pretend that it is. They may still need additional herbal medicine from me, or they may need to see a gynecologist. But it's certainly, it always helps to some degree, at least.
Yeah. We have no excuses. That's very interesting.
It's Stephanie, you'll have to get on it and let me know in a month's time how you have been.
Yeah.
And of course, we could look at it from a Western point of view as well. And we know it's antiviral and antibacterial and all of that, which is important also.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you kind of touched on the microbiome there and you know, healthy gut bacteria and the balance. One of your Instagram, I think you had said on Instagram that digestion has a relation to all elements of health. How do you explain that kind of in simple terms?
Okay, well, it's not just me that has said that. I mean, there's a few famous quotes. You've probably heard of them, that disease begins in the colon and all death begins in the gut. I may have got those slightly the wrong way around, intertwined, but I think we have heard of that before. So our gut is so central to our health and well-being. It's how we take the energy from the external world. It's one of the ways, because obviously breathing is the other, but we take the energy from the external world and we consume it to extract the nutrients to keep us alive once they're transported around the body. And basically what's happening, certainly in the Western world, is that a lot of the time, by mistreating our digestive system, you know, with the ice cold drinks and then not fully digesting our food or eating our food on the run, which may happen a lot. Well, it happens everywhere, but I just imagine it happening a lot in New York as well. You know, trying to do your work while eating, you know, you can't digest, you're not going to digest both. Sometimes people have, they're under pressure, they're stressed and they're trying to eat. But when we're under stress,
your stomach is
enough. Yes, because your body has released adrenaline, and you know, it's really your brain's thinking this is a life or death situation here. I need to run or to fight. So all blood is taken away from the digestive system and the reproductive system as well, because they're not essential at that moment, and it's sent to our heart to make our heartbeat, and to our lungs so we can take in more oxygen, and to our arms and legs so that we can run or fight. And there's no blood there to digest the food. But really what we're doing is we're sitting at a desk and somebody has just sent us an email moving a deadline a day forward or something. And that's what caused the stress. We don't need to run or to fight. So it's all those kind of things. And if you think about it, you know, even in one day, people can do 5 or 6 of those. And then if they're doing it, you know, a couple of days a week, that's all going to add up. And so we have this food that's not being digested, just kind of lying in the gut. And I know this is going to sound really strange to some people, but in Chinese medicine, I've been taught it ends up kind of creating somewhat of a swamp, like a compost heap, a swamp. And that's where then you will hear practitioners of Chinese medicine say, oh, there's damp in the body, which is a buildup of mucus and biofilms and things like that, which is what ultimately that's going to become. And then that just sits in different parts of the body and it can slow things down and it can interfere and it stops with the free flow of blood. It stops with the free flow of the qi, which is and a really important part of Chinese medicine, which refers to the gases which in the body. It stops the free flow of the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system would be like the bin men of the body, where they come around and clean everything out. And so slowly over time, like nothing, we don't really wake up sick. These things are building over years and years and years and
slowing things down.
Yeah. And we got this feeling like, you know, you talk to people now in their late 20s and 30s and they're thinking, they just know there's something not right. You know, they're like, I don't have as much energy as I used to, or they might be slightly constipated, or they may have loose stools, or they may have skin problems. You know, they're not sick by any stretch of the imagination, but they're not in optimum health. So we're left in this in-between area. From a Western point of view, it's like this in-between area, because you have to have something show up in a scan on your tissue, or you have to have a blood test to be at a certain level before you can be diagnosed with something. And you have to be diagnosed with something before treatment can start. So you're either in good health or you're sick.
Yeah.
They don't have this in-between area that so many of us resonate with, because that's where a lot of us are. We're like, yeah, I know I'm not sick, but there's just something not right. You know, I can't get to sleep at night, or I'm waking up at night. They're all signs that there's just something not quite right.
And that's like almost the most important stage, because you want to catch things before it gets too far.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And this is where I come in as well and go, you know what? This is, you can do so much at this stage with lifestyle changes. So much.
Yeah. And save yourself so much in the long term.
Save yourself, yeah. And I know lifestyle changes aren't easy, and we are fighting against the power of marketing constantly, which is specific. It is set to manipulate us into buying products and doing things that may not be optimum for us. You know, I'm talking about the food industry and stuff like that. So it is hard. It's really hard, and we're very time poor. Or we were very time poor 3 months ago. So it can be very hard to fit the exercise in and fit in the time for cooking as well. But, you know, between breathing exercises, supporting the digestive system, supporting the blood flow around the body, it is amazing the difference that we can do.
Yeah. The blood flow seems to be one of the bigger things. When you touched on it there, it kind of like, you know, if you have good blood flow, then you have great digestion, which is going to have great repercussions.
Yes,
in the whole system.
Absolutely. It really is. And it's something that we just don't talk about enough. I mean, so many women have cold hands and cold feet. And it's a sign that digestion is a little bit sluggish. I mean, you're a long way off a point where you really have to worry. But, you know, it's already started to slow down. When you stop and think, you're like, of course, every cell in the body needs blood flow. And we talk about, I know you work with skin, and when people are talking about skin and microneedling and massage and everything, they're always talking about stimulating blood flow. And I'm looking at them going, well, that's only the micro blood flow that's already in the area. When you need to work on the macro blood, you need to work on the heart, and you need to work to make sure the blood is pumping around the body to the extremities as well. And then you can consider, you probably won't need to consider the micro blood flow, but it's only then that you could consider it.
Yeah. And you'd have better repercussions all around and more.
Oh, absolutely. And aging. Yeah. What is aging? One of the big things of aging is the slowing down of the cardiovascular system.
Yeah.
You know, you look at a toddler, young child, they're warm. They have so much energy. They make so much noise. They fall over so many times, and they jump back up because they have strong hearts and great blood flow. Whereas you look at an elderly person, the opposite. They're cold. They're quiet. They don't have that energy for running around. They can't fall over once because it would really hurt them.
Yeah,
you know, and their hearts, they have aged, and their hearts are much slower, and their blood is much slower.
Yeah.
Around the body as well. So
that's a huge comparison.
If we can keep our blood moving, you know, when we're younger and middle-aged, you know, it just helps us age that little bit slower, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that would be ideal.
It would be. But then that's why where exercise is important. And we do hear people will say, oh, if you do X amount of exercise a week, you can add a couple of years onto your life. You know, we do hear that, the advantages of exercising. Again, that's something people have to take responsibility for themselves. It's not, the answer isn't always outside of them. Yeah. So, and back to the digestive system, could you had mentioned that? So many of us then are living with suboptimal digestive systems, and we don't notice it, because some question I would ask people, do you have any digestive problems? No. I'm like, okay. I say, okay, so do you have like a well-formed healthy bowel movement once or twice a day? And they're like, no, you know, and I'm like, okay, we have a digestive problem. So, you know, some people don't even have a bowel movement every day. We should be having at least one, optimally 2-3 a day.
Yeah.
It is one of the ways the body detoxes. We have an awful lot of people that bloat. You know, they'll eat something and then they'll bloat up, or people can have a lot of loose stools. And when I say loose stools, I don't mean diarrhea. And this is a very common thing with women, where they're up first thing in the morning and they have a really loose, they have a bowel movement that's not well formed.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes when I say a loose bowel movement, people think I mean like diarrhea, and I don't. I just mean it's not well formed. And those ladies usually bruise easy, have a sweet tooth and have a tendency to bloat very easy as well, and are worriers.
That's very interesting.
Yeah,
that is
a lot of people resonate with that, and that is a sign of a weaker digestive system.
Right.
And one of the ways, because I know it's not fair to leave people, because I know an awful lot of people going, "Oh, she's just describing me." So if that is one of the things you can do is cut out the raw food and drink. Add the ginger, the raw ginger tea into your diet, and soups and stews are the way to go, because they're already so well cooked and broken down that it takes some of the work away from the digestive system to have to do that.
Yeah, very interesting. So where did we stop on the digestive system? Well, I think you've given a great idea as to, you know, those kind of signs to look out for.
When people ask me, sometimes people go, what will I do for my thyroid? What will I do for my back pain? What will I do for this ache or pain? And I'm like, you know what? Your body's your body. It doesn't matter what your Western disease title is. Your body still needs good blood flow. It needs a really good, strong digestive system, and it needs you to manage stress.
Yeah.
And we are responsible for the strength of our digestive system. We are responsible for managing our own stress, and we are responsible for moving our body, keeping our feet warm, and for supporting the blood flow throughout the body. So that's a really positive thing that people can take from this, that there is so much that we can do as individuals to support our health and well-being that doesn't cost a fortune. And that if you've a gallbladder problem, a thyroid problem, you still need your body to do all of those things.
Yeah. So you can, there's proactive things that you can do to take control and to help, you know, encourage a better digestive and by the foods that you eat and avoiding the iced drinks and all that and exercising.
Yeah. And again, I have to say, you know, it's not always instead of seeing a doctor or a therapist. And right. I don't want anybody to think that, but you can do those things whilst attending your doctor, and hopefully it will just speed things up.
Yeah.
Or maybe you'll need to see him for less time or whatever. I just really want to point that out again in case anybody's thinking it's in place of. Again, if somebody just has a little bit of IBS or a day or two of period pain, the simple things may be more than enough for them.
Yeah, no, totally. So one of the questions that, because I kind of put it out on Instagram, did anybody have any questions for you? And a lot of people, we have a lot of followers in common that have also followed you and are aware of the work that you do. One of the bigger questions, and I'm sure this is kind of top line stuff for you, but it was, what happens when I come off the pill? Like, I want to get off the pill, but I'm, you know, there's more awareness around the effects of the contraceptive pill, and people are asking what happens when I come off, or, you know, should I come off, or anything like that. What kind of advice would you have for somebody like that?
Okay, well, there's two reasons people take the pill. One of them is for contraception purposes, and if it was their chosen form of contraception and they now want to come off the pill, they can just stop taking it. And they need to watch out for they need to support their bodies, because the pill prevents the absorption of quite a few nutrients that are important for our health and well-being, and it also causes a lot of disruption for the microbiome. So they need to make sure, like, I, you know, all my answer is always the same for people, but they need to support their digestive system and make sure it's really strong and healthy. They need to eliminate as much as they can the anti-nutrients in their body, which would be all the fun things, the processed food, the alcohol, the sugars. High levels of stress will deplete nutrients from your body as well. So they need to manage stress, and then they need to make sure that they have a good, strong digestive system as well, so that when they are eating their good food, they are able to extract the nutrients from that food.
Yeah.
And then they just need to watch out for ovulation and that first period. So what can happen is that you know, sometimes women can, they're not in any contraception, but they can have a bleed, but they haven't ovulated. So that can lure women into a self, into a false sense of security where they're like, oh, my period's back. Great. But make sure that it's a good flow for at least 3 to 5 days and that you do see signs of that fertile discharge approximately day 12, 14, 15 of the menstrual.
So, yeah, going back to all the stuff that you had mentioned at the beginning of what a healthy period.
And notice, are they noticing too those fluxes in their energy levels and their moods? Yes, they're very subtle at the start, but once you are familiar with them, they're much easier to recognize. Because that is something that can happen. And I'd like to think your period, I would give it maybe 3 months. And then you could maybe see a therapist for a little bit of support. I think, I'm not sure how soon after going off the pill, Western medicine will help you. Sometimes they'll say, oh, it can take up to a year, just give a little bit more time. But of course, I would suggest supporting the body mostly through food, exercise, and managing stress. Now, there's another reason for taking the pill. And it's because it has been, I'm even struggling to say this because it really is one of those things that upsets me. It's prescribed as a medication. It's not a medication. So sometimes somebody might have had acne or they had really bad period pain or they had a cycle that wasn't regular. So they have been told that, oh, take the pill. It stops the period pain. Take the pill. It regulates your period. Take the pill. It cures your acne. It does not do any of those things. Hormonal contraception works by stopping the body having a menstrual cycle. It stops the body ovulating. And if you're not ovulating, you're not having a period. So for the women out there that were having irregular cycles, to me, an irregular cycle was better than having no cycle at all. And of course, it doesn't stop period pain. It stops you having a period. So anyway, so a lot of those women now will be coming off the pill, and it is going to be different for them because what can happen is their symptoms will return.
Yeah.
And sometimes worse than they were before. And actually, sometimes when women who had no problems coming off the pill, they can develop post-pill amenorrhea, which is, means they're not having their periods, post-pill PCOS or post-pill acne.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that element as well, and that's what scares people, especially people that have had the acne. They're really afraid that it's going to come back, and it usually does come back. And then there are the people that had the debilitating pain. They're worried about it coming back, and again, it quite often does.
Yeah, because it seems like you're just suppressing all of that with a different level of hormones, and then you just kind of go back to normal, and it's there's no cure. You're not curing anything.
No, well, Stephanie, I explain it to people. It's like if I called up an electrician and said to him, I have an electrical fault. Every time I hit a light switch, I get a shock. And he comes around and he checks my house and he says, Maria, you do have an electrical fault. I'm just going to disconnect you from the mains. And I'm like, you know what, that would stop me from getting a shock from the light switches, but my house wouldn't be fully functional. And you know, over time things would just deteriorate within the building. And so basically that's what they're doing. They're just like, you know what, you've got a hormonal problem. I don't know how to fix it, so I'm just going to disconnect. I'm just going to switch it off, disconnect it.
Yeah. Why does the body go into that post-pill PCOS or post-pill acne? How does that happen with the hormones?
Well, again, looking at it from a Chinese medicine point of view, because that's my area, quite often for some women, it will cause additional stasis in the pelvis, which is blood stasis. And then if the blood's not flowing freely, we will see symptoms of that throughout the body, whether that is amenorrhea, which is no period, which is can be complete stasis because the flow isn't happening, or it can be some, like, we would look at acne very, very differently from what they do in the Western world. And some of the root cause of acne would be stasis as well. The other thing is the pill completely throws off the urogenital microbiome, which is going to have implications for all aspects, you know, maybe even something like painful sex or low libido, all those things. I know we hear an awful lot about our gut microbiome, but we've microbiome in other parts of our body as well. And we can have dysbiosis. We've heard of dysbiosis and leaky gut. We can have dysbiosis in the urogenital tract and also the respiratory as well. So I don't know how, well, for me, I would always say, people always go, it's hormonal and I've got a hormonal problem. And I think, really? Do you really have a hormonal problem? Let's think about this. Because ultimately, quite often what's happening is our hormones are working exactly how they are supposed to work, given the environment they're in, given the body.
Right.
I know that sounds really strange, but if we think about it, it's what's happening external to our body and what's happening internal our body that's causing our hormones to react the way they are.
But what about for somebody who doesn't who has an underactive thyroid or something, that they aren't, is that just a reaction to the body?
Well, no. Well, we have to think about it again in basic terms. But why is it on? Like, this is what we have to keep asking: why is it underactive?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's something happening within that body or outside that body. You know, maybe the body's not getting enough nutrients. Is the person not eating enough nutrients? Is the digestive system not strong enough to extract the nutrients and then deliver it all around the body? Is there a high level of stress that's knocking the nutrients off and that's causing many other processes within the body that can cause health problems as well?
Mm.
You know, because quite often, and then the beauty, I know it can be a little bit difficult to get your head around, but it's also quite simple. If we think it's not, the hormones are doing what they're meant to do, given the circumstances. And then that leaves us back to the place where, oh, maybe we should change the circumstances. Maybe we need to go to bed and get more sleep. Yeah. Maybe we need to look at what we're consuming in terms of food. Like, is it all actual food? Are we eating enough? Are we eating too much? Are we getting enough movement? Are we sweating every day? You know, it's important that we sweat every day, which is something that just doesn't happen anymore. And when we look at all these things within the body, then maybe we can piece together and go, well, you know, I don't go to bed till 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm up again at 7.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
so maybe it's the circumstances that you're giving your body, really, based on all those different elements. It's a true holistic approach to health, and the hormones will probably react they're given.
Exactly. But another thing, now we are living in the modern day as well, and something we have to look at as well, and we have to mention, given hormone mimicry and endocrine disruptors are, you know, the level of toxins, and one of them being the BPAs and the plastics that we are consuming.
Yeah, there's not a lot of awareness around that, you know, and not enough, I don't think, around hormone disruptors externally.
Skincare or
plastics.
Yeah, it is. It's a difficult one because, you know, you'll get the bounce back. No, they're tested for safety. They're all safe. All the ingredients are safe. You know, you do get that bounce back and you think, right, really? To my knowledge, and maybe it has changed, but the last time I looked into it, the testing was very much I think how it's tested, they take a high level of the ingredient and they test it and they're looking for an acute reaction, like death or a burn or, you know, vomiting or you know, it's an acute, and they keep lowering it until they get a level where there's no real reaction. And it's done over a very short term. But the reality is we're using very small amounts of the ingredients, but we're using them on a daily basis. Yeah. And they haven't, I don't know if the research exists for long-term use with chronic diseases.
So there's still kind of a grey area around testing.
It is a grey area. And, you know, where there's money involved, it's very hard to get to the bottom of these things. And that's the way the world works. Yeah. The other thing about all of these things is I think they test ingredients individually, yet we never use them individually.
There's
usually a synergistic combination that we are either ingesting, we're inhaling, or we're absorbing in through the skin. So it's an area where I like, I do my fertility webinars, and it is a big aspect of it, and I like to bring awareness to it, but I'm also very aware that it's a part where you could absolutely freak people out. And cause them more stress. So I just like to say to people to be aware and to educate and make the simple swaps where you can make the simple swaps.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It reiterates the importance of having to poo every day and to sweat every day to eliminate all those things from our body as well. And, you know, it's the modern world. We cannot avoid them.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you are aware that we're consuming them in one way or another, and it encourages people to eat more green veg to support their body's elimination, well, then that's one way we can fight it. We may not be able to avoid all these toxins, but we can support our bodies to be able to be stronger to fight it.
Yeah, and there's actually, I was reading your blog on detoxing and natural ways to detox and to understand how your body does that, whether it's, you know, through sweat or whatever it might be, but to understand kind of your body's natural way of detoxing itself. Yeah. And again, going back to the smoothies, we don't need a frozen green smoothie to detox.
No, we really don't. And the smoothie is, at least it's not a $59.99, 28-day magic pill.
I know, you know, aloe vera juice or something crazy.
But I get it. We'd all go, I'd much rather spend the $28.99 and take a pill every day than have to go for a run every day. You know, I get it. But unfortunately, yeah, the body needs what the body needs. Movement, air, sunlight, connection. And sometimes it's just too simple, isn't it? Or it sounds too simple because we're living in this world where everything is so much more complex.
Yeah.
And to say to people, you know, just walk for 45 minutes twice a day. Because they're like, oh, really? Is that enough exercise? Because we're bombarded with these images of amazing people doing all sorts of tricks and lifting all sorts of things in the gym. And then we look at the yoga pictures and I'm like if I didn't know about yoga years ago, if I'd only just come upon yoga via Instagram in the last few years, I would think it was headstands and handstands.
Yeah, yeah. I know, and even, my own mother, she's... she's always into walking and she's so active and so busy, but a year or so she's taken up yoga, and you know, she's like, oh my god, you know, I'm not fit, or I'm not a runner, or I'm not this or that, and taking up yoga, and she's totally like loves it, and it's a great, you know, discipline for people to kind of get into.
And yoga is medicine.
Yeah.
And I should say that, yes, if you are that person that is looking at Instagram thinking, I can't do a headstand, I can't go to a yoga class, the reality is in a yoga class, it's not like that. So please do go to the yoga class. I think it's just the reality of inside a normal everyday yoga class just isn't exciting enough for an Instagram picture. So please don't let that put you off.
Totally. I think it's very important to call out that, you know, those people who lift and do kind of these extreme sports or extreme different types of disciplines. And even for myself, like, I love to run, and some days I don't run, and some days I run slower, and some days I run fast. But, you know, it's that's my jam. And you know, but I'll also lay down and stretch for 30 minutes and just kind of, you know, do some yoga and in my own way. But it's kind of adapting and kind of, it's a lovely actually way to end this episode, because it's a true kind of holistic approach to everything, and to understand that it's the environment that your body is operating in, and the things that you can feed it and give it to work by itself and to do its jobs.
And I hope, I know we've talked about so much and we've jumped And
I know.
I hope the takeaway thing is that that women take away from this is that you're not meant to suffer just because you're a woman.
Yeah.
And perhaps you've been told something is normal, like leaking or severe pain or anything. They're common, yes, but they're not normal. I hope that you learn to track your cycle or learn to tune in with your cycle, that you learn to trust your body and to live within that rhythm and that natural ebb and flow of the menstrual cycle. And I hope that your other takeaway is that it's so much easier and cheaper to support your body and to look after your body than you may be led to believe.